occurred to me, should I gather notes? What have we done so far? Where are we going? So I'm like, here, it's like we're at scratch again in some ways. Like, I didn't save anything, I don't know, that we talked about.
I don't think.
Like with Mark, you know, that was sort of like the big first step between the two of us and a real guest.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess what I'm saying is, like, where should we begin?
How about here?
Okay, we're here.
We're here.
Would there be any way, or how do you think, what do you think about, like, mixing in some, like, retro sort of, you know, American Top 40 music now, your own, you know, like old clips from, you know, old fashioned show.
It.
I mean, just sort of, because this is sort of a new version of, I don't know. That just occurred
where
to me.
It's like Dave Letterman's Top 40.
Ba-ba-da-bow! You know, just some kind of a retro type AM radio.
That's,
you know,
so good.
Good morning, Vietnam. You know, kind of a. I don't know. We'll start with the music, and then I'll scan through YouTube to see if there isn't any sort of generic type, you know.
Okay.
The
sounds
music
good.
Of your life.
Ba-da-ding, yes.
Da boom.
So we're gonna play with your iTunes.
Okay.
And we're gonna learn all about your songs, and I'm just gonna ask you questions about, you know, you and the music and what matters to you.
Okay.
And then we can switch.
Okay.
So I'm ready.
Okay. Let me go ahead and bring her up.
Delia, oh Delia. It's not an Annie Woman song, it's just an Annie Delia song. Yeah. Delia, oh Delia, Delia all my life. If I hadn't a shot poor Delia, I'd have had her for my wife. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone.
I was never really a Johnny Cash fan. I can't call myself a genuine fan of anything, sports or music or anything. But there is, you know, there's a relationship that I do have. And it's an odd one. Johnny Cash collaborated with the guy who produced the Beastie Boys album.
Okay.
You know, I can't think of his name off the top of my head either. I'd probably be more prepared if...
That's okay.
If I had a life. But this particular Johnny Cash album was released right around the time of the O.J. trial. Or the O.J. incident, when Nicole and Ron Perlman, I think, the waiter from the restaurant that she was at prior to O.J. killing her, was like the news item of the day.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah.
They called that like the trial of the century, if I'm not.
Well, we've just seen that incredibly successful HBO movie about it. But this song, Delia's Gone, which is Johnny Cash talking about sitting in prison because he murdered, you know, his paramour Delia. Yeah, happened to be playing on my boombox on a CD as I'm watching OJ being driven around by Al Cowlings in the White Bronco throughout Los Angeles, city that at that point I had never visited. But in any case, it was one of those moments where the sort of video that I was watching from the news feed and this particular song coalesced and created, you know, and, you know, forever in my mind, a soundtrack. Every time I hear Delia's Gone, I go back to where I was living in Cambridge, Massachusetts on Pearl Street, small studio apartment, and just kind of watching like, wow, life is weird, man.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. How old were you when the...
I was young. I was still in elementary school, I think.
How impactful do you think that, I mean, knowing O.J. Simpson's sort of NFL history and all of that?
I didn't know he was an NFL player.
Oh, okay.
Honestly, that information didn't occur to me until much, much later, I think after high school. But, yeah, I remember I was much too young to comprehend, like, what it was about.
Mm-hmm.
But our counselors in school thought it was a really big deal, and so...
You actually had a meeting about it in school?
Oh, yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't get it. I was like, okay.
So third grade, fourth grade?
It must have been.
Oh, my God, yeah.
It was, Mrs. Steinowitz or something, the counselor's name.
Mm-hmm.
I used to have lunch in her office all the time because I was so bullied in school.
You were bullied?
Yeah. And so I would go into Mrs. Steinowitz, I think was her name, and I would sit in her office and have lunch and hang out.
What was Mrs. Steinowitz?
Yeah, Mrs. Steinowitz.
She was a teacher?
She was a counselor. She was the school counselor, and I would just go in there and hang out.
Are you still?
Have my peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. Oh. Am I still bullied? No. Well,
no,
maybe,
no,
but nobody tells me.
Well, are you in touch with Ms. Steinowitz?
No. No.
See, as a person who has worked in education, anytime a student might, which has never actually really happened for me, but I've seen it in some of my colleagues, others, where a student kind of goes, hey, that was an important time in my life.
Yeah.
This is a Buffalo Springfield.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
there's something happening here. But what it is ain't exactly clear.
It's hard not to associate this song with Forrest Gump for me and with, like, Vietnam and the war.
Which I think is what makes the Forrest Gump soundtrack so universally engageable, you know, because for many people. Now, it wasn't the original sort of release of this song that got me because I was very young.
Okay.
You know, and I don't even recall hearing it at times when in the early 1970s when, you know, my mother was pretty engaged in civil rights and you know, sort of the whole, you know, for lack of a better word, the hippie movement, you know. Mm-hmm. I do recall those moments, you know, but I actually became familiar and developed a love for this song by watching Vietnam documentaries.
Really?
Yeah. So simultaneously I was being, I don't know what the best documentaries on the Vietnam War were on PBS, and I know that they were probably largely intended to sort of educate the viewer on the damage and horror of Vietnam.
Yeah. I was going to say, weren't they pretty violent? I thought they were very graphic.
Incredibly graphic.
Yeah.
But the reaction I was having when I first heard this particular song laid under video footage, it was the Huey Cobra helicopter gunships flying at treetop level over Hanoi or near the Ho Chi Minh Trail in Vietnam.
Yeah.
Dropping canisters of napalm. Boom.
Whoa.
And they're playing this like protest song, this sort of like bring the people together song. And my brain created this sort of like parting of the logic sea almost, where I was equally sort of excited about the message in the song, but it reinforced my resolve to enlist in the military. It was like totally not the intention of this song. Yeah.
And you enlisted?
I did. Yeah. I spent 6 years in the U.S. Army Reserve.
Wow.
I went to Fort Jackson, South Carolina, and Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri. And in the reserves, you train for 2 weeks. And then every summer, they call it summer camp. Interesting. We'll blow stuff up. And then I was on call for the first sort of conflict.
How did your mom feel about that when you enlisted, being someone that was so active in the civil rights movement?
My mother was really opposed to it, and I needed permission from my guardians, my legal guardians, to go in at 17 years old.
Yeah.
My dad was super gung-ho. He didn't go to Vietnam, and I think a part of him really regrets having not enlisted.
Yeah.
Are your parents involved in the military at all?
No, but my grandfather is very similar to you and your dad in the sense that he enlisted, but there was never a time where he needed to be deployed overseas. Mm-hmm. So he went through summer camp, so you called it. Mm-hmm. And I want to say he played trumpet in the Army for a while.
You need maybe it's a bugle.
Yeah, maybe I need to ask him. But now fast forward into the 2000s, and I remember him complaining that he's never been served with jury duty. He's like, I just want to serve my country. You know, just all these years, he's like, I've never gotten to go to war. You know, I've never been on, you know, been able to perform my civic duty. And he's funny that way.
Well, isn't it all funny? Because what is our civic duty? And where do we, I mean, I haven't sensed in this country any kind of a unity that we sometimes see or hear about from the old days.
Some folks are born made to wave the flag, pull their red, white.
this particular Creedence Clearwater Revival, mm-hmm. you know, Fortunate Son, mm-hmm. the words and lyrics in this song has always like been for me a pump-up song. Like,
yeah.
It's just got a real great beat.
Yeah.
I love the way that the singer, John Fogerty, just screams out, you know, the lyrics. And today it's talking about the realities of, you know, the diversity between, I don't know, the privileged moneyed elite and the so-called liberal left elite. And I was on a plane the other day and just this was in my earbuds and I lost control of my ability to maintain my composure. And I started rocking out in the middle of the fuselage. Like, we were on the ground getting ready to deplane. And I was just like, I don't give a fuck. You know, this, and I was dancing. And I, you know, I am caught up in a little bit of the sort of social norms, ideas of being a 52-year-old, relatively conservative-looking white male.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ways I'm raging against that machine is like, I'm going to dance when I feel like dancing anywhere in public.
You can dance if you want to.
Yeah. And I can leave my friends behind.
You could. Because if they don't dance.
And if they don't dance.
Then they're no friends of ours.
Do you see how
his
music informs our lives?
Yes.
The soundtrack of our lives.
It is.
Yeah.
I can just picture you in the middle of the airport. Air drums.
With an attitude face.
Oh, yeah.
If you could see my facial expression right now, the listeners. Yeah,
yes, scrunched up.
Aggressive.
Big old F you.
When I was in basic training, I guess, which is kind of becoming the theme of our segment here.
Yes.
I had for the first time in my life a huge sort of multi... I was raised part-time in a house that was both African-American and Caucasian. My mom's second husband, William Herndon Sr., was a black guy with three black kids.
Wow.
And my mom was a white woman with three white kids, and we Brady Bunched our family.
Wow.
Yeah, and so, you know, the sort of whole dynamic of black America and white America was very much in our face. And, you know, it's kind of a sidetrack when
Obama... You
guys
were kind of the poster... family.
It well, when Obama was nominated, I couldn't help but think like, wow, kind of validation, you know, like that wasn't so weird after all. And I don't know that it was weird in the moment, but it was certainly challenging and there was a lot of stuff going on. But it wasn't until I was at Fort Jackson in 1982 where I was sort of immersed in all of the different, like, guys from California, women and men. Fort Jackson's a multi-gender basic training camp. So you'd do KP duty with women and men and women and all kinds of sort of backgrounds. And I never really, at that time in my life, embraced country western music. And a buddy of mine that I made in Alpha Company, 3-1, 2nd Battalion, 3rd Brigade, 2-1, 1st Brigade, I don't remember. but this guy had a tattoo on his forearm, Waylon and Willie.
She's a good-hearted woman in love with a good time.
And this is Waylon Jennings and Willie Nelson talking about good-hearted woman.
Oh my God, yeah.
And in my greatest levels of sort of egotistical ideology of myself, I kind of consider myself that good time in man, and I think of women in my life that have tolerated my completely unpredictable, self-centered, bizarre behavior, and this song can bring me to tears in moments that I'm alone.
Sure.
Because I've had some really amazing relationships in my life, and you know, this song makes me reflect. Like, am I allowed to be a dick? You know, is this song giving me permission to be a dick?
Well, it did at one point.
I guess so.
Well, how old were you when you enlisted?
17.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, that makes sense why you needed the mm-hmm. permission of your parents. Oh, my God.
I fantasize to this day of having a variety television show.
Uh-huh.
And this is the opening music. Yeah.
I can remember a lot of songs from movies that mean a lot to me, and this is really embarrassing. This song is part of the Charlie's Angels soundtrack.
I didn't know that.
And the reason that movie is important to me, because it was the first time that I was like, it's okay to be in this body, you know, because that had Cameron Diaz, Lucy Liu, and Drew Barrymore. And Drew Barrymore was really important to me because she doesn't look like a typical Hollywood starlet. And I was like, oh my God, I'm like Drew Barrymore. And so when that song is, I think it's like part of the bad guys scene, but I love that movie. Because for me, it was like the first time that it was like, you can be in this body that doesn't look like everyone on TV, and that's okay. And isn't that strange?
I don't know that it's strange. I'm just curious, like, as a woman, you know, and the reality is that you're a young woman sort of embarking, you know, on your career. You're still kind of at the beginning, and there's more to accomplish. When you say that, it just, to me, sort of invites the question, what's it like to be a woman today?
Oh, God. That's for a whole nother podcast, I think.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Fair enough.
It's awesome, and it's...
But it was this was a moment of... this music helped you to sort of...
I didn't mean
identify.
To take over your song here, but... Yeah.
No, that's, I mean, we're ping pong, and that's what this is, I think, is that the music really allows us to engage in a conversation that it might be about us individually, but it's really, you know, the background music is informing this experience in ways that, you know, I think, I don't know, when I think about Y-Tune Shuffle in general, we can't deny the fact that, you know, sort of raising the energy among the troops before a battle was informed by music, the drum beat, like the march.
Sure.
You know, and it's like we cannot engage in this battle or we will probably be,
you'll be defeated.
Encouraged.
Oh,
you know,
sure.
You know, to engage with the sort of patriotic music and the marching and
get the adrenaline going a little bit. Sure.
I mean,
like, I think it's the same, you know, there's definitely a playlist that goes through my head before I go on stage for stand-up comedy. So in the car, you know, you got to crank it up, whatever that is.
Oh, my God. You nailed it. Okay, Maggie, now listen, and this is what I'm really super interested in with listeners and anybody that comes on this program. Is that what is your in the car pump up song?
Yeah.
Such a big part of our reality is the access to a great Blaupunk stereo with super cool, you know, speakers inside of a car.
Yes.
Did you say this was a song that you listened to as a pump up song or not?
No. I'm just saying that was part of a movie that was important to me because it was the first time that I was like, hey, body issues.
Hey, body issues.
You're not a big deal.
Yeah. And for me, it was body issues as a man, as a young man, bartending at The Haunt, which was, they advertised, it was a bar, nightclub in my hometown of Ithaca, New York. And my mother actually went there a number of times to party, and I would hear about this, The Haunt, roots rock and reggae, and I became a bartender, and I played the same pump up song in my 1971 Pontiac Le Mans before every shift because I had body issues. I wasn't a buff guy, in my opinion. I wasn't a good looking guy, in my opinion.
I was
lucky to be in the company of people that I sort of considered to be the cool kids.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm in college at this point. I'm like 19 to 20 years old, and I'm bartending in the hippest club in Ithaca, New York, which, you know, the reputation, we had people like Yellow Man come through, the Chili Peppers when they were brand new.
Wow.
There. Yeah, yeah. A lot of blues. It was roots rock and reggae music live.
That's really cool.
Unbelievable.
You're just slinging beers.
Slinging beers, making drinks, pitcher night, you know.
Did they make you do this topless? I mean,
topless? Well.
Well, because I know that like in some of those hipper ones, they'll have the men in like the cuffs, you know, or like tank tops or
this
something
was,
that was pretty form-fitting.
This was the 80s. This was the 80s, and it was about hair.
Okay.
You know, asymmetrical haircuts.
Sure.
OP clothing, like in the summertime.
What's OP clothing?
Ocean Pacific Clothing used to be a clothing store in virtually every mall across America, and it was polo-type shirts, Hawaiian-type shirts,
okay,
ocean Pacific beachwear kind of, which was very popular. And living in central New York, which is like Midwest, basically, upstate New York, it's just like we're desperate to have a flip-flop culture, and we only get 2 or 3 months out of the year to possibly live that. And I always equate the haunt with summertime. I think probably those were some of the funnest things. But no, my body images and my ego were challenged. I think so many of us are.
I think so too. I think especially women forget that men experience that now increasingly more than ever as you see the superhero phase that we're going through, especially in movies.
Yeah.
And the V cut. Mm-hmm. That women just get so excited for, the magic mics that come out. Mm-hmm. I think women forget that men are experiencing what we have been for decades, you know?
And
maybe forever. I mean, I haven't looked into this history so much, but the corset, you know, the history of the corset and the female figure and how it's supposed to be.
But
I can't imagine that Cleopatra really had body issues. I can't imagine that was a thing.
Well, I wonder, you know, and where is the accurate depiction of Cleopatra?
Is
she the one that launched 1,000 ships? The face that launched, or is that Queen Elizabeth or something like that?
Well, trusty internet.
Exactly.
Egyptian princess.
I have a friend, Dave Rath, who oftentimes jokes whenever we get to a sort of crossroads with information. He says, I wish we had a little box that we could plug in. Yeah. But when you look at pictures of men and women, you know, on the plains during the sort of manifest destiny of the United States and the sort of pillaging of our land from indigenous people, those ugly motherfuckers, you know. And I'm saying that, you know, but I definitely have image. I have an image sort of bias, which.
Please take comfort in knowing you're not alone.
Okay.
Okay.
I will take comfort. I won't take drugs, but I will take comfort.
Okay. How about a hug?
Okay, yeah. Free hug.
This is a lot to read.
Y-tune shuffles.
But Cleopatra was simply known as the last active pharaoh of Egypt.
I didn't know she was the last one.
Yeah. Well, now we know.
Now we know. That's what we do know about Cleopatra.
There's a lot of words that I'm not even going to try and pronounce because, you know, you can read it on Wikipedia. That's what the internet's for. All right, so what do you think? One more song?
Well, this is it. Fine Young Cannibals. You know, and where did the Fine Young Cannibals go?
Where?
You know,
where did they come from? Where did they go?
So impactful. Such a short-lived experience for me. I'm sitting on the couch in my college. This has become, for me, this version of Y-Tune Shuffle. It's been about the military. It's been about college. Very much about the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, that's where my Y-Tunes went on this particular episode.
We'll have to revisit this.
Me in the 80s. Well, that's the beauty of the show is that, you know, our guests have an open invitation and need not be famous. Or infamous. We want anybody and everybody to come on this. But this was me sort of expanding my musical horizons from REO Speedwagon, Van Halen, AC/DC.
Yeah.
CCR, Creedence Clearwater Revival. Like I was getting out of rock and sort of into a whole new sort of venue, which would later serve me well when I moved to Boston, Massachusetts and began to start interacting with independent bands, you know. So amazing. Fine Young Cannibals. They were fine.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I was young.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I'm sure cannibalization was... Jeffrey Dahmer was, you know, approaching his 20s. That's what was happening. That's where my brain goes with this.
All right.
Okay.
So, all right, before you go, what was your first concert?
My first concert was Boston.
Really?
At Barton Hall.
Okay.
On the campus of Cornell University. Nice. I grew up in Ithaca, New York. And they had a great opening act. This real wild, energetic, long, blonde-haired guy named Sammy Hagar.
Wow.
Who opened it up. And Sammy Hagar must have been so new to concert venues. Now, Barton Hall is a huge basketball arena.
Okay.
And it's got sort of not only the court area, but like it's on either side of the court. Mm-hmm. It extends out to like two. So it's a giant arena. And I remember clearly Sammy Hagar saying, wow, this is like being at Woodstock, which, you know, in the moment, I was kind of like, yeah, there's a lot of people because I was new at concerts. It was my first one.
Yeah.
But now that I think about it, that was kind of a weird thing to say
yeah.
when you really think about Woodstock. So I think Sammy might have gotten the nod, like, you'll open for this band, Boston.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
Which sadly, I learned later, the guy who created, like it was an independent deal, the person who formed the band Boston first made the record all by himself.
Mm-hmm.
With all types of like instruments, and then the record became popular, and then he formed a backup band.
Oh,
I thought that was unfair.
Why?
I just always thought that. I mean, I had no idea that that was something that you would do as a, you know, I'm not that bright. I
know that
like the Beatles, you get a band together.
Yeah, you get a band together.
Then you go.
Yeah. I know that. That's how the Foo Fighters were formed.
So music first, and then.
Yeah.
Dave Grohl did all
Dave Grohl, after the end of Nirvana, Dave Grohl was like, well, I've still got more to say.
Mm-hmm.
And so he made this like mixtape,
mm-hmm.
gave it to the record label, and they're like, we love it. And he's mm-hmm. like, oh, well, it was all me. So then formed the band.
I'm all for it now.
Yeah.
But when I first heard it, it was jarring. That's what I was like,
you're like,
really?
I play guitar. I can yeah. play. I can do it.
That would be that.
Too funny. Well, David.
Yes.
This has been amazing.
Thanks, Maggie.
Thank you for letting us play your Y-Tune Shuffle.
Okay, that's why.